Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with My Opel, rewarding loyalty and taking care of members.
And I'm joined in the studio now by Eamon Ryan, Minister for the Environment, Climate and Communications and Minister for Transport. You're very welcome. Morning. Thank you for being here. So the Climate Change Advisory Council has proposed these carbon budgets, which people will have been hearing about yesterday and today. We're told they're going to radically change how we live. So first off, does the government accept the levels that they've suggested?
Yeah, well, I'll have to bring it to government, so I can't speak on behalf of government yet, but I expect we will.
You accept them then?
Oh, God, yes. And because it's following science. Our programme for government, we set a very ambitious climate target, halving our emissions this decade, net zero by 2050. But we did so not on the basis of politics, but on the basis of what the science says we need to do. And for the very good reason to protect our people, from the natural systems breaking down and our ability to live safely on this planet being eroded, to protect our people as well, because this is the way the world is going to go now to solve this problem. The new economy will be decarbonized. The jobs, the opportunities will come. And if we as a country opted out and said, don't count us in, not only would it be morally bankrupt, but actually economically wouldn't work either. This is the better future.
But this is not going to be pain-free. And now it's very much over to you. That's what we've been hearing. And your job is to set these sectoral ceilings. Will you take us through what's going to happen now?
Yeah, it'll be an ongoing iterative process. In other words, it'll keep evolving and we learn by doing. So what we're doing now is a follow-on from what was done back in 2019. There was a climate action plan written there then. Next week, I expect government will publish a new version of that. And it will take a lot of what's good in the existing plan, but it will have further ambition, going further, going faster. And then it will continue to be reviewed. So every year we'll be looking to see, are we achieving our goals? Are we achieving our targets? That will involve the opposition. It will involve stakeholders, civil society, the public. First thing we will do is go out and ask the public for their views to listen. And it will continue to involve the Climate Change Advisory Council as they review what we're doing and make recommendations and act independently to advise us on, are we on track? Are we taking the right sort of course? How do we need to change? Mm-hmm. So it will be an ongoing evolving change. But the broad budget set out, the advantage of these 3 5-year budgets is it gives us a context within which we can measure performance. How are we doing? Having the budgets give us a clear sense of that. It's basically, this is the sort amount of carbon we should be releasing in the next 5 years. If we're off track on then we need to change.
I'm just really interested to know how it's going to work with each department. I mean, is it like a normal financial budget in that the ministers will have to come in and battle and barter with you on this?
It's not financial. The budget here is for the carbon or the carbon equivalent. I heard Mary Donnelly on Morning Ireland this morning, very eloquent in setting out that it's not just carbon, it's also nitrous oxides, biogenic methane and methane. And then there's a whole range of other smaller fluorocarbons. So there's a range of different gases. We have a budget for those. Each department has already been working with our department to give a range of what we think is possible. And that's what we'll publish in the Climate Action Plan next week. And then we will further engage in consultation, engage with the opposition and the Oireachtas, because this works best when it is cross-party. These budgets are going to apply for the next 15 years. That's probably 3 governments. Mm-hmm. So we need all parties involved to assess, how does each sector involve?
Yeah, but do you see my point that the Minister for Agriculture have to come in and say to you, here's what I think we can do. And you'll turn around and say, here's what I think you can do. And there's a bit of push and pull there.
We've already been negotiating for about the last year on this question. And it's clear that different sectors will have different abilities to make changes. The one that probably will make the largest change in the energy sector, particularly in the electrification of everything and the use of our renewable electricity. And the reason that will probably have a much higher percentage reduction than any other is because that is one where we're full of opportunity. There's a risk at the moment, people know, people have heard the headlines today, we're at risk from high fossil fuel prices. We can't control what goes on in Russia or Saudi Arabia or Asia, but we can tap into our own wind power particularly, and particularly offshore wind. So by doing that, we think we can achieve a very significant reduction. It's more competitive, it creates employment here. It's a no-brainer for us to make this leap and make this change. The other then sectors, Industry, again, a significant reduction. Probably takes a bit longer because in terms of adapting a factory, let's say if you've a cement plant, how you actually change that so you either capture the carbon or you change the fuel takes time. You don't replace a cement plant overnight. But significant reduction. Transport, I think, is going to be the most difficult. Transport will have a target of something like a 50% reduction in emissions.
And that's your
this
own.
Decade. Yeah. And it is the most challenging because we can see clearly now electric vehicles are going to have a significant role. But
they're too expensive. Bottom line, they're just too dear for people to buy. I mean, most families can't afford to spend at least 30 grand on a new electric vehicle.
True. And that's why we give something like a 10,000 euro grant to try and get over this initial higher cost. We can expect the cost to come down as production becomes standardised.
When though? Because I heard a guy from Ford UK on the BBC about 2 weeks ago saying that that won't happen in any great way, you know, material way, until 2030. I mean, if you're relying on that...
That may be Ford's view, but the best experts we're listening to and reading internationally as well here at home is that the total cost of operating an electric vehicle will come below the cost of a combustion fuel engine in the next 2 to 3 years. And that is because your fuel cost is typically a fifth, depends when you charge it and how, but it can be as much a reduction as that. The maintenance cost is similarly a fraction. You have much less moving parts in an electric vehicle, much simpler to run. So the cost there will come down. But that on its own is not going to be enough, because if we just replaced every single combustion engine car with an electric vehicle, we would have the same gridlock that we're suffering now. We have the same inefficient system. We need also to reduce, and this is what I heard Mary Donnelly say this morning, I think she's absolutely correct. The first thing we need to do in every different sector is to become more efficient, to use less. And in this instance, in the area of transport, to develop the idea of the 15-minute city, 15-minute town, in other words, having services close to you so that you don't have to travel so much, and to use remote working now. It is likely to be a long-term feature coming out of COVID, so we don't all have to commute all the time. And also, to radically, I mean, if you look at this morning, 30% of the traffic in peak hours, and traffic's back now to full levels pretty much, is children being driven to schools. If we could create a safe system for our children to walk and cycle and take the bus to school, you lose 30% of the traffic in the morning. Not only does that see a 30% reduction in emissions, but it actually makes life better for everyone because we're not all stuck in traffic. So we're going to need other changes other than just the electrification.
Are you going to make public transport free? Is that part of your ambition?
No, our announced in the budget only 2 weeks ago, I think, a significant step in the right direction. It's particularly for those younger people aged 19 to 23. We're going to halve the cost of public transport, issue them a public transport card which will allow them to get a 50% reduction. I think that's important, particularly in that time in your life when you set the patterns of kind of, you know, how do you get to work, how do you get to college, to help and facilitate that. The key thing I think what Irish people want is more public transport. Right across this country, every time we've introduced a new public transport service, the Irish people flock to it. And I think particularly now in addressing the housing crisis. We need to do that in a way that makes sure new housing is close to public transport, so we improve people's quality of lives as well as cutting out the carbon. The last sector, if I can just explain these kind of major areas, is land use and agriculture. And that's probably got the most attention, most controversy. It won't have, particularly in the first decade, as high emissions reductions target as some of the other sectors, because again, it takes time. It takes time to adjust a farm. It takes time to plant a forest and to see the carbon benefits accrue. But again, in this sector, in my mind, the current system is not working for the vast majority of Irish farmers whose income is very low. There's an opportunity and potential here for us to pay a whole new generation of farmers for protection of nature, for the restoration of biodiversity, for the removal of pollution, as well as the storage of carbon and the production of high quality food.
So you'll pay them to protect the land,
yes,
as opposed to produce something on the land.
Yes, and that's already been agreed in the Common Agricultural Policy reform, which has been set by the European Union to say, we're in a disaster in terms of loss of nature, loss of biodiversity, as well as climate. and also pollution problem. Our rivers are massively polluted and we need to stop that and start to turn around this destruction of nature that has taken place over the last four, five, 6 decades.
You know the farmers are terrified. They're terrified that you're going to turn around and say we need to cut the herd. We've got 6.5 million animals in this country at the moment. What do you say to them?
Well, first, this will not work. If we're kind of just blaming people, pointing the finger at them, you're the bad guy or girl, that's not going to work. We have to work with people and work with the farming communities. And as I said, I think the future of Irish farming is in this whole range of different services they are providing, including the likes of forestry, where a farmer, it's not that you'd stop farming, but we're looking at schemes now in the recent budget, and it'll be included in the Common Agricultural Policy review, to say, okay, those areas, let's say, of the farm, which are maybe turning corner in the field where the tractor won't get in, that's where we plant trees and get the farmer to plant as part of this storing of carbon.
And what about the cattle and the cows?
Well, first thing first in terms of cattle and cows, if we don't go Origin Green, most of our cattle and dairy is exported to the rest of the world, to the UK, to Europe, to America, to China. If we don't go green, if we aren't truly Origin Green, in my mind, that market shuts down because our consumers around the world are not going to be part of it, want to be part of buying into a system that is destroying nature.
Is it destroying nature now? Because you know the farmers here say we are the most environmentally responsible producers of beef in the world.
We have a huge advantage here that we have a family farm system that is less intense, absolutely, than the big factory lots. You can have farms over in China where you might have 15,000 cows in the one shed, in the one big hectare lot, a 3 hectare lot. Whereas our farming system, typically the average farmer, the average number of cows in an Irish farmer, I think is about 16 in the beef and suckler herd, and dairy is less than 100, around about 100. So we do have a real advantage in that it's largely grazed, outdoors, much better animal welfare, much better standards, much better food. In my mind, we're not getting the proper premium for that. Like, I can never understand, why is it that the price per litre of milk in Ireland is below continental European prices when actually our milk is much better because it is a cow out in nature, growing mainly grass-fed. And I think we should be getting a premium for that.
So can I put it to you simply, if the farmers grow more trees, can they keep their cows and their cattle at the levels that they're at now, 6.5 million?
That's part of, I think it's like we will unlikely have the same number of cattle. I think that will occur on a natural rather than someone going out on a cull basis. But as other services and as diversification takes place and as the income stream comes for other uses of land and other forms of forestry, and even, for example...
So government is not going to say we need to cut the herd by this much?
Well, can I give you an example again? If we switch to organic farming, that is less intense. You don't have the exact same number of cows per hectare, but you can get a premium. And I believe you get other better outcomes. And the key other change is you've less costs. So by reducing the fertiliser cost, that first of all reduces those nitrous oxides I was talking about earlier on. It reduces the bill to the farmer. And in my mind, we can get a premium because we can sell our goods on the world as a truly Origin Green country. Okay. The alternative, if we don't do it, I don't think we would have a secure and safer future in farming as well as in the environment.
What happens if these targets that you're going to set, if they're breached, what sort of enforcement will be in place?
The mechanism allows the Climate Advisory Council, as I said, to hold the government to account, to look and see what's happening. But also, it does require the government then to change its plans, to review and try different policies. There isn't a financial penalty on that. There is within the European Union system. So what we're setting as a national target is very similar to what will be set in Europe. So we will have real legal constraints on the European side, but just in our own national plans. But it is subject to legal, it is justiciable. You know, there was someone could take a court case to say the government is ignoring the targets that have been set. And that actually is already, but there was a case last summer where such a case was taken and won, where the previous plan was actually annulled because the government weren't seen to be delivering it. So there is legal check on this.
Will there be enforcement, though, in each individual sector?
Yes, the process now is, okay, the Climate Advisory Council, which is this independent 15 body of experts, they produce the budget, the overall, you know, how much should we be able to use in the next 5, 10 and 15 years. The government, the week after next or next week, will publish a draft climate action plan in response to that, showing within ranges where each sector we expect and the sort of measures we expect to introduce. That will be debated by the Oireachtas and as part of public consultation process, and then we will hone it down to much more tighter sectoral targets, so mm-hmm. what we expect to do in each area and the policies backing it up. And then it's a matter of really doing now. It's implementing. We have budgets increasingly available. The National Development Plan for the next 10 years gave us the budget capability to do what we need to do. A lot of the difficulties will be around, a lot of times it's around planning, or if you look at transport, it takes time to make changes.
If a factory, if a sector, if a farmer ignores these new rules that are in place, what will happen?
It doesn't necessarily, the signals to the farmer and the individual factory will come in pricing signals or in regulatory signals about the need to switch. It's not that they themselves will have an individual budget, but mm-hmm. they will. Any business that isn't starting to think now about, OK, how do I stop using fossil fuels? And all good businesses know this, that if they're not thinking that 5-10 years ahead and start making the switch, they themselves are going to be held to account by that, not just in the government way, but the new accounting rules will measure what are companies doing and publish that.
Social Justice Ireland, Colette Bennett from that organisation, compares this to the austerity years and the budgets that followed 2008 in terms of the impact that it might have and fairness when it comes to the groups that will be hit the hardest. Do you think that's a fair comparison?
We absolutely have to avoid that, and it does have to be climate justice and a just transition have to be the centre of what's done. And again, I think the example of that, I know it's controversial, the introduction of carbon tax was, you know, no one wants to be introducing any tax. But one of the ways that that has been done, that all the revenue is hypothecated. In other words, it's ring fenced. It's guaranteed to go into a certain area. 30% of it has gone in the last 2 years into increased social welfare payments, increased fuel allowance, increased living at home alone allowance, increased qualified child allowance. And 55% has gone into retrofitting people's homes, helping them, and the vast majority of that into social beneficial measures, in other words, targeting local authority housing, people in low incomes. And a final 15% of the budget is going to go to small farmers, again, often at risk of poverty. So there's an example where we can make the change. And what the ESRI and other independent analysis shows, in each of the last 2 years, the budgets have been progressive because of that. Mm-hmm. They benefited the poorer rather than the wealthier. And so that can be done.
Once your carbon budget has been announced, will people face any additional charges or taxes that weren't announced in the October 12th budget?
No, I think the main changes are going to come. If you look at what are the big changes? I
mean, can you guarantee that, though?
The main changes are going to come from developing renewable electricity. That doesn't, that a lot of this, that the, you know, if we put all this down on the consumer, say, what are you doing and what's your individual decisions? The environmental movement has learned in the last 30 years that focus on blaming the individual or putting all the kind of emphasis on the individual doesn't work. It is system change we need. And system change occurs by regulatory change, by changing the rules in terms of, well, so you can't, like, we won't have fossil fuel heating systems in a few years' time. You just won't be able to buy one. It'll be a sense of, no, that's not the way we go.
But it's not free. Like, it's a 5 billion euro cost, isn't it? Who's going to pay?
Who goes to pay if we destroy the whole planet? Like, I mean, we do need to go back to the basics here at some point, saying who's going to manage when climate migration becomes wholesale problem? Who's going to manage the flooding costs and the drought and the endless costs in that? But if you see it all in that cost benefit way, I think you miss. There is also an opportunity here, like the system change we can make is towards a better system. Like in energy, if we're using our own energy rather than relying on imported energy, that's good. In transport, like a car-dominated, gridlocked system where people are stuck commuting for hours every day, that's like, I prefer a system where it's safe to walk and cycle. I think most people would. And a farming system where you get a whole generation of new farmers coming in and you're paying them for their skill in understanding soil management and understanding how you restore nature as well as do good farming. And that's not bad. That's all for the good. Okay. And I think the Irish people are up for it. Like, I think the, of course, all persuasions, I think what they're afraid is they don't know what exactly does it mean or what exactly do I have to do. And so I think our job is to engage now in a conversation with the Irish people. Here's the sort of changes. We think it can be for the better. And I think we're well placed and well up to making the leap.
In September, at the end of September, you said that you couldn't rule out energy blackouts. What are you saying on that now? Has anything changed? Can you rule them in?
Yeah. We were in a very difficult place in the autumn because two of our main gas plants, modern gas plants, were out of action, had been out of action for a year. And a number of other plants were also out for maintenance. Post-COVID, there had been maintenance scheduling problems. So we were in a very precarious situation. That's less now, a few weeks later, I'm glad to say, because one of the main plants has come back repaired. And the second is due back shortly in the next week or two. And therefore, it's not quite as tight. We still have to plan for... we have to deliver about 2 gigawatts of additional backup gas plant, and that will back up the very large scale renewable power we're going to bring in. We'll bring in something like 5 gigawatts of offshore wind in the same period, and that'll help balance it. We'll use less gas, but we'll use it in a clever way where it's so we can secure a system. There's still a lot of work.
And that'll come into effect when it's not very windy.
Yes. Today we won't need it. It's very windy today. So we're on full power, almost kind of a huge amount of Irish wind. And we will have, again, this project in terms of switching to renewables and relying on efficiency. That's the clever way to go. Mm-hmm. For the Irish consumer, a lot of this will come because of how we design the grid, how we bring in investment. It's not, it'll be at the individual level, you won't know, notice the difference, you switch on off the lights.
I suppose for the people who are very worried when you couldn't rule out energy blackouts, can you rule them out now?
You can never be completely certain because, you know, the way that those two plants broke down could happen again. But it's much less likely now. We're in a much better position, even 5 or 6 weeks later. But it was better to be honest about that. We were in a tight situation just because of circumstances surrounding a number of fossil fuel plants.
Would you consider nuclear power?
I've always said I wouldn't rule it out, but I'll be honest, I don't see it as part of the future energy system here. It's incredibly expensive. When we why would we go to nuclear when we have this renewable power supply, which at be massive scale?
The wind.
And also, it's not flexible. What we'll need is this balancing system between variable power supplies and variable demand. Nuclear is very slow to crank up. It's very, it's not as reliable. You often have to, particularly for a very big plant, sometimes nuclear plants, you have to shut them off straight away, any risk whatsoever. So it doesn't work on our system. It's incredibly expensive. I wouldn't rule it out, but I've never met a single person coming to me saying they wanted to invest in renewables in nuclear in this country, because to be honest, all the money, all the smart engineering, all the attention is going on the renewable alternative.
Minister, thank you very much for coming in. It's Minister Eamon Ryan. We'll take a break.